Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 407 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing great, my man. How you feeling?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie, as you know. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. It went down last Friday, July 28th, at the Palms Casino Resort in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. It was live on ESPN+. It was live on Sky Sports here in the UK. Three fights in total to discuss here. Abraham Nova with a really good knockout win in round three. He's now 23-1. Like I say, the knockout in round three against Jonathan Romero, now 35-2. Extremely padded record, Romero. And yeah, a guy that's been around for a long, long time. Suffered his one loss to Kiko Martinez years and years ago. I think it's just a case really here of Abraham Nova being a bit too fresh, a bit too young, and probably a bit too good for Romero, to be honest with you. So a good win for him. I like his style. I like the way he's got the blonde beard. He looked good, and on to the next one for him. It's a good name, I guess, on his resume. Moving up the card once again, this one was for the vacant WBC USA Silver Super Featherweight title. We saw a friend of the show, Andres Cortez, move to 20-0, a retirement win in round 7. His opponent, Xavier Martinez, didn't come out for round 8. He's now 18-2. It was very much a toss-up fight, to be honest with you, I think, at the time of the stoppage. I think it was Robert Garcia in the corner with Martinez decided to not allow him to come out for that eighth round, and a lot of people were, you know, quite disappointed with that decision because the fight was still in the balance. But again, I haven't actually seen what's happened, but you know, I trust Robert Garcia, very good trainer, and obviously there's a reason behind his decision there, I'm sure. The main event, Sinisa Estrada, now 25-0, a unanimous decision there over 10 2-minute rounds against Leonella Udisa, now 19-2 with 3 draws. It was for the WBA and WBC world minimum weight world titles. Sinisa Estrada, you know, like I said on last week's show, it wasn't really the fight that she wanted. I think she kind of wants more of the bigger names, and this was a fight that pretty much happened out of convenience more than anything else. But I tell you what, I don't know if she just overlooked her or what, but yeah, she gave Estrada a real fight, and a lot of people actually felt Udisa did enough to nick it in the end. I'm not sure, it was really close. I wasn't strictly scoring it, but Estrada got the nod. It was unanimous, like I say, but very, very close on the cards there. I think she was 1-16 to win that fight, so they were super, super, super confident with Estrada. But yeah, she definitely didn't look 1-16 on the night. Moving now to the Telford International Centre here in the UK in Shropshire. Over here, this one was live on TNT Sports, aka BT Sports. Couple fights to mention. Moses Itauma with a win, now 4-0, a points win over 6 rounds against Kevin Espindola, who's now 7-8, still only has that one stoppage defeat to Fraser Clark, in which, you know, he retired on his stool with an injury, a genuine injury. Got in with Itauma. Itauma, obviously, he's now 4-0 with only 2 KOs. He was 2-0, 2 KOs. They've put him in with two durable journeymen who have done their jobs properly and took him the distance. A lot of people very quick to criticise Itauma. I think it's extremely unfair. They've thrown him in with stiff competition straight away. And if he would have knocked this guy out, Espindola, then it would have been a massive statement. So he's still a young kid, and you can't jump on this bandwagon of hate and all the rest of it this early. That's just crazy to me. But yeah, I think they probably you know, wanted to probably get a stoppage in one of the two, at least, of his previous two fights that he's both times gone the distance in. They were talking about trying to get him to beat Mike Tyson's heavyweight world title record, and I think that, you know, going the distance with these two guys probably hasn't done that any favours. Moving up the card again, this one didn't go the distance, and I was very surprised to see it. Ben Fowl with a TKO against the ever-tough Serge Ambomo, who's now 11-48 with three draws. Ben Fowl, 4-0. Like I say, I was really, really impressed with him to get a knockout against a guy as tough as Ambomo. Ambomo is built like a, you know, like a brick you-know-what house. And usually just comes forward, usually just takes a lot of jabs in the face and stuff like that. But he's a pressure fighting journeyman, really. And he's hard to keep off of you. And like I say, he's upset the apple cart many times and he does not really get stopped. So I think that was really impressive from Ben Fowl. Moving up the card once again, Ethan James with a good win. It was for the vacant WBO European welterweight title. They thought he was going to beat James Moorcroft quite convincingly initially, and then the odds tightened up. A lot of money was coming for James Moorcroft, who had, you know, a couple of decent wins in recent fights and stuff like that. But yeah, Ethan James, just a bit too good, really. Boxed really well. I think he's going to learn a hell of a lot from that. He's 12-0 now. He holds this European WBO title. And yeah, it was a great, you know, a great kind of, I don't want to say crossroads fight, but, you know, a great fight between two of the best in the UK. And credit to Ethan James, passed a good test there. And yeah, another great fight in the main event, obviously, was supposed to be a fantastic domestic dust-up. Liam Davies, I had full confidence in him to get the win over Jason Cunningham, now 32-8. I said it as well to Liam Davies when we had him on the show a few weeks ago. I said, I've only ever been to two Jason Cunningham fights. He's had 39 fights and only twice has he been knocked out. You know what I'm saying? And I was at both the fights that he got knocked out in. So I'm like Jason Cunningham's bad luck charm. And I said, I'm not going to be there in Telford though. So best of luck getting the knockout. And wow, he did not need me because he got it in the very first round. And I think that surprised everyone. I did put a bit of money on Liam Davies to get the stoppage between round 7 and 12. And yeah, to get him out in a round was just unbelievable. He got him hurt. He had him down. And yeah, that was very early on in that round, and in that first round. Then yeah, got back up, like I say, and Liam Davies just didn't let him off the hook. And yeah, that is a magnificent statement. It just goes to show, you know, the depth really in class when it comes to Liam Davies. I think he's been an unsung great fighter for a long time, and I think he's only just now getting the plaudits. I mean, look at this guy. You know, British super bantamweight champion, EBU European super bantamweight champion, and he also picked up the WBC and WBO international super bantamweight belts as well. This guy, I think, is really going places. I'm so happy for him. Really good fighter. I think he's excellent, Liam Davies. And yeah, moving now to the big one. It's the final card to mention. It took place at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, live on Showtime pay-per-view. Let's start briefly with the undercard. Yoenis Teles, he was 5-0. He's now 6-0. A TKO in just the third round against Sergio Garcia, who's now 34-3. Very interesting because Sergio Garcia actually opened up as the betting underdog. But then on the night, he actually became the favourite. So I thought that was quite interesting. A lot of money going on the Spaniard there, because obviously he's a tough guy. He's only been, you know, beaten by really good fighters. Sebastian Fundora and Tony Harrison. Both times he took the distance. He's getting in with a guy who's only 5-0 with 4 KOs. Granted, the guy was a good amateur and stuff like that. But come on, this is a massive step up for just your sick fight. And I said that about 10 times on last week's show. Well, it wasn't big enough, I don't think, because he managed to get in there and knock out, TKO Sergio Garcia in just the third round. That was That was just a crazy statement. He's done something that the Towering Inferno couldn't do and that Tony Harrison couldn't do in 10 and 12 rounds there. He's done it in just three. So that's a scary, scary, scary win there. And I'm going to be all over Tellez's next few fights with my eyes for sure. I think this guy must be special to do that to Sergio Garcia. Moving up the card once again, the living legend, the future Hall of Famer, Nonito Donaire, now 42-8. He lost a unanimous decision over 12 rounds to Alexandro Santiago, now 28-3 with 5 draws. It was for the vacant WBC World Bantamweight title. I did say on last week's show, we haven't seen Nonito Donaire since he lost brutally to Naoya Inoue in 2 rounds. And I said, you know what, I've just got this feeling he could have got old overnight out of nowhere, but it's going to be interesting to see, but I wouldn't be surprised with an upset. I think I said something along those lines, and yeah, I called it, and I was gutted to have called it, to be honest with you. I really, really like Nonito, great guy, one of the best guys in boxing, one of the nicest guys, one of the best fighters of the last God knows how many years, and it was sad to see him lose to a guy really who wouldn't have been able to hang with him even just 2 years ago, 3 years ago. You know, I think finally the age and the wars have caught up with Nonito Donaire now. I don't know if he's going to be carrying on or not, but hopefully he doesn't, because I don't want to see him tarnish his legacy. But what a fantastic fighter he's been. What a great servant of the sport. And it was just sad to see him lose to Santiago. But credit to Santiago. He's a new world champion. And he's an unlikely world champion at that. And yeah, Isaac Cruz with a very close split decision win over 12 rounds against Giovanni Cabrera. Isaac Cruz now 25-2 with a draw. Cabrera now 21-1. He loses his O. Isaac Cruz deducted a point in round 8 for a headbutt. It was for the WBC Silver and WBO Latino lightweight titles. Some people felt Cabrera nicked it. Some people felt that Cruz nicked it. I think the scorecards reflected it really, because like I say, we did see a split. Thank God it wasn't one-sided to Cruz. Yeah, no one really wants to see the Cruz and Gervonta Tank Davis rematch, to be honest with you, but yeah, you know, good stuff for Isaac Cruz to pick up a win, but he didn't look good, and it was a very kind of lackluster performance from him. He did hurt Cabrera in the mid-rounds, but he didn't look great early on, and he didn't finish, you know, and close the show great either. So, yeah, a bit underwhelming from Isaac Cruz, but he gets the win nonetheless, and he goes on to bigger and better things. I wouldn't mind seeing Cabrera again, though, to be totally honest with you. And then, yeah, the main event, Errol Spence Jr., now 28-1. He loses his O. He loses 3 of the major world titles that he held to Terence Bud Crawford, now 40-0. A TKO in round 9. Spence down in the first. Sorry, not the first, the second. Twice in round 7, and then, like I say, TKO'd in round 9, where Harvey Dock jumped in and stopped it. I'm going to run through the fight myself, Eddie, and then we'll come to you, of course. I'm sure there's a lot to discuss. Round 1, for me, a pure feel-out round. I felt it was kind of wrong to score it to either guy. I did see a lot of people were scoring it to Spence. I think Spence did look really comfortable in that first round, actually. He wasn't scared to push the action. Crawford probably landed the better of the jabs, but Spence did actually throw a few power shots. It was a 10-10 round, really. You know, I don't really think either guy did enough to win it, but a lot of people gave it to Spence. I don't really care, that's fine. Round 2, obviously, wow, massive round for Crawford. He was having a lot of success with big right-hand jabs from that southpaw stance. Big, big power jabs, man. And obviously, Spence goes down in that round. He gets countered with some kind of 1-2. I think the punch that caught him was the left hand, obviously. And then he gave him a little short and sharp right jab just to help him on his way down. It was more of a flash knockdown. I think Bud Crawford addressed that afterwards in the post-fight interview. It wasn't like he was massively hurt, but gets the round 10-8. Round 3, another Crawford round for me. The commentary team didn't agree. They actually gave the round to Spence. I can't remember who was commentating on it now over here on TNT Sports. But yeah, Spence came out on the front foot after being dropped in the second round, and he tried to put the pressure on in response, like I say. Once again, I felt Bud had great success with that powerful jab, though. And again, he also landed some beautiful, you know, beautiful power shots. I felt Crawford was too clever for Spence in that round. This is something, though, that I've said time and time again. I was super confident in picking Bud Crawford. I never swayed at all ever since the first fight got mentioned. I was super confident with Bud, and I always said that I felt he's the much, much smarter fighter, the much better fighter all round. And yeah, like I say, I think we were starting to see it as early as that third round. Round four, another Crawford round. He was in full control by this point. Spence looked so unsettled. Crawford was getting into his rhythm. Spence's face was all busted up as well that early on. Yeah, Bud, I just felt, was a different level. Too fast, brutally quick with his left hook counter again and again. Unbelievable stuff from Bud Crawford. Round five, Crawford, once again, I felt was, you know, escalating the levels again. You know, you could see the difference in both the guys. Spence's face continued to look a complete mess. The doctor did actually have a look at Spence as well at the very start of that fifth round. But yeah, Spence was getting beaten up and he was starting to look really tired as well at the end of the fifth. Crawford, I felt, was just kind of playing with him, really. Round six, another Crawford round. He was just tattooing Spence's face. Spence, at that point already in round six, I felt, needed a knockout. And it was only round six, you know, which is mad. Crawford, I felt, had the fight in the bag. Unless, of course, he walked into a big shot. It was just a case of if Errol Spence could have stood up to this beatdown for another six rounds. I'm not doubting Spence's heart. I think at times in the fight he was fighting on instinct, and I just felt he was second best in every area. He had nothing at all for Crawford, nothing. Round seven, Spence got on the attack, you know, managed to put Bud back, you know, put Bud's back to the ropes, and then he got countered off of those ropes. Yeah, I think it was a counter right uppercut, if I'm not mistaken. Down Spence goes for the second time in the contest, but the first time in that seventh round. And then, of course, he goes down again from a right hook in that same round, so he loses the round 10-7. At that point, I wanted Derek James to throw the towel in. I felt that the fight was becoming quite dangerous. Obviously, he didn't stop the fight. Round eight, Crawford decided to have a little rest, I felt. And yeah, the TV still gave him that round. He just looked on a completely different planet to Spence, who a lot of people, including yourself, Eddie, were so confidently picking. I just never could see it. And yeah, I just, it honestly went kind of as I expected. I know there's a lot of people saying, okay, I thought he'd win, but maybe not in that dominating of a fashion. I don't want to say I expected all of it, but I expected something like this. I wasn't actually surprised. I was kind of happy to have been proven right. You know, proven right with my thoughts on Crawford. And then, yeah, just finally that ninth round, a dominant round again from Crawford. I honestly couldn't begin to tell you what punch hurt Errol, because I think every punch hurt Errol, and I was really, really happy that Harvey Dock jumped in when he did. But yeah, the beatdown that he took was so bad that I think if the fight would have carried on, it could have been career ending. I genuinely hope Spence is okay, but yeah, he got absolutely smoked, and I don't like to say that too often, Eddie, but this was a case of, you know, complete and utter domination over an undefeated unified champion at the weight who is the real welterweight, you know, the real welterweight here, the big guy for 147. Terence Crawford's moved from lightweight to super lightweight up to welterweight and dominated a much bigger man.
It's unreal to think that could happen, but I mean, you know, it did. You know, I don't think Spence has done himself any favors in, you know, these last years, you know, being putting himself in harm's way in a lot of other ways. And I don't know how he lives. I mean, it's just too many times I've seen him not necessarily living right. And I'm not saying that has anything to do with how he performs, because he was still able to perform in other fights. But I'm just going to say this. I didn't like how he looked at all getting in there. And like, from what I'm hearing, because I didn't even see the first round. I didn't see the first three or four rounds. Now that I think about it, I only saw the beatdown part, the real beatdown part. So, you know, I can't really judge on that because I don't know what was going on with RTV, but it was like behind. And then people were saying that he got dropped. I'm like, what? I'm like, the fight ain't even on yet. And then I turn it on and it's fine. And I'm looking, it's in like the fifth round. But, yeah, I just, I didn't like the way he looked. And then he got in there and all of the issues, all of those things that we talked about in Joe, which you mentioned of, you know, him not being in the same class as far as, you know, certain how, you know, certain skills, certain attributes that he has, right? I never really questioned that. The only thing that I would think that I was thinking and reason why, see, I went against, you know, my better judgment in picking this fight because, you know, I already knew, you know, everybody knows Terrence Crawford's obviously the more, has more explosive power, you know, better fighter from the outside, better defensive fighter. He's pretty much the lead in most categories, but the way I was picking it was because of determination, chin, overall desire and toughness. Not saying that Bud doesn't have all those things. Of course he does, as you can see, but I was picking it based on the pace and what I knew Earl could do as far as, and then, you know, he's a good punch. He's a hard puncher, not necessarily the puncher, you know, punch for punch that Terrence Crawford is, but a cumulative type of fighter. So I figured that the pressure eventually, you know, as long as Earl could take what Terrence is throwing, I believe that the pressure would eventually get to where it would be kind of like Kell Brook in the first fight when Kell Brook was doing, I mean, in the fight with Kell Brook and Earl, where he was doing well and boxing well early, and then Earl got to him, you know, and started to take the fight over as the fight went on. I was expecting something to that effect. Obviously, Terrence Crawford being a better fighter than Brook and having more power and, you know, most of the other things that was going on with him that he had in what Crawford has in his favor. But still thinking that similar type of situation. And I've seen Crawford hurt by other fighters that are much lesser fighters than Earl. And then these all play into, I think that there's an opportunity here. If Earl's able to withstand what Crawford can hit with Crawford's throwing and the heaviness of his shots, if he can deal with that and keep coming, then it's going to end up being a long night for Terrence. Actually turned out to be the other way. You know what I mean? And he absolutely couldn't deal with, especially after the first few rounds, of the power of Terrence Crawford. And a lot of that is also because when you don't see where the shots are coming from, like that knockdown with the right uppercut, he did not see that shot coming. I didn't even see the shot land until I looked at the replay because it was so smooth. I was looking at Earl and he was being aggressive and throwing. And the funny thing is, Earl landed like an overhand left. And at that time, right as he landed the overhand left, Terrence Crawford let that right uppercut, a little sneaky right uppercut on this side, boom, caught him flush. And he went down. There's no way Earl seen that. And that's why he's on the ground. You understand what I'm saying? And also, things that I overlooked, and I tell these to my guys that I train all the time, those huge steps and throwing extremely long and big shots from the outside is eventually going to lead to your demise. If you throw long shots with huge steps, especially at fighters who are prepared to deal with that, and that's like looking at a steak dinner right in front of you. It's just so easy to pick apart. If somebody, listen, there's a good amount of heavyweights out there that fought like that. And every single one of them are in my win column. You know what I mean? So me overlooking that because I understood what the pace and the power and the toughness and the desire that Earl has and, you know, the demeanor of never being really pushed or never looking out of, you know, uncomfortable in there. It just looked to me like, yo, yeah, he's going to take this. And that pace is eventually going to be too much for Terrence to deal with as the fight goes on. No, it just never happened. It never happened. His punches did not affect Terrence Crawford in the least. You know what I mean? I understand he probably had looked as if he had problems making the weight. I don't know if that had something to do with it, but his punches looked like he was literally just pushing them at him. You know what I'm saying? And when is the last time you've seen a guy that's won in division. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's probably happened. I mean, you have mismatches, you know, different people's, you know, different fighters fight different fighters, and sometimes one person's path to the title is a little easier than someone else's. So, you know, maybe that can be the reason for the big mismatch. But when have two fighters that have been heralded like these two guys as being the top guys been this big of a discrepancy in the fight, the finish of the fight, where one guy has clearly been way above the other? It doesn't typically happen like that. So there is a lot of things that I'm looking at in this fight. Like, could there have been some other factors other than just Terrence Crawford being extremely brilliant, which he was? And I don't think if everything was perfect for Errol Spence, that he probably still couldn't have won the fight. Possibly could have still got stopped. Possibly not. You know, maybe he would have made the distance. Maybe he would have been strong enough to deal with it. But as it stands, got to give Terrence Crawford his flowers, as his coach said. You got to give him his flowers. The kid is a special, special guy. Now I'm seeing comparisons to Floyd Mayweather in his prime. And, you know, I just seen something today about Trinidad and Crawford at 154, who wins. I'm picking Crawford in that. No disrespect to the great Tito Trinidad. But he's arrived as a real serious guy at any time in the history of boxing, to where people would have to really, you know, have to like think twice about what they about to do with this guy if they got to step in the ring with him. So, excellent fight. You couldn't have won it better for a guy you're supporting, and he looked tremendous. He looked tremendous, and you know, his attitude toward the sport, the level of respect, the conditioning, the, you know, the IQ, everything. Dude's a dynamite fighter. I got to give him credit.
Yeah, like I say, though, I kind of expected this kind of performance from Terrence Crawford. Like I say, not all of it, but somewhere near what he performed like, you know. Maybe he did slightly better than I thought he would have done. But honestly, this is how good this guy is. He still has that 100% knockout streak at welterweight. And he's done it against Errol Spence, who many people felt was the, you know, the top dog at the weight. And, he couldn't get near Crawford. You know, Crawford made him look like an amateur, really. And I hate to sort of say this because I don't really want to kick a man when he's down. But if you go back and hear me talk about Spence in the past, I've never, ever rated him as highly as many other people did. You know, I've always felt he was a bit of a weight bully. I've never rated him as a true top fighter. Like, he's never been, you know, in my pound for pound list. I think he might have got into maybe 10th position last year, but it, you know, some people had this guy number 3, number 4, number 5 pound for pound. I'd never ever understood that. I thought it was madness, and I think he's proved my point there. I don't think many people are going to have him in the top 10 now. I give Spence credit for his recent run, and I really mean his very recent run. The UGAS win was a good win, but like I say, the guy has made a massive career of being the biggest welterweight in the division, beating up smaller guys, mainly 140 fighters coming up. You know, obviously, like I say, I give him credit for beating UGAS. He beat Danny Garcia the fight before that. That's a 140 fighter moving up. He still couldn't stop him. The fight before that, a very close, very, very close win against Sean Porter. Okay, I give him credit for that. Mikey Garcia, the fight before that. And, you know, this guy's not even a lightweight, is he? You know, he's a super featherweight, probably his best days. And he couldn't stop him, couldn't even drop him. And then the fights before that, Lamont Peterson, another 140 fighter moving up. The fight before that, Kell Brook, again, I give him a little bit of credit, but not as much as other people did. I still feel like Brook crashed the weight. Brook was coming off a smashing, literally, to his skull by Golovkin at middleweight. So I don't give him, you know, I give him a little bit of credit, but not loads. And then, yeah, the fights before that, like Chris Algieri, another guy moving up from 140. This guy has only ever really knocked out 140 pounders coming up to welterweight, aside from UGAS. And the other guys that have come from 140 and up, he hasn't even managed to knock them out or drop them, like Garcia and like Danny Garcia and Mikey Garcia. So, yeah, I don't want to see the rematch. I know we might see it, and that's just mad to me, but I don't want to see it. A lot of people are out there already saying that Spence should retire. I'm not entirely sure I would get on that bandwagon, but he did take a beating of a lifetime. If Crawford does decide to move to 154, he's already the favourite against Charlo. Yeah, honestly, if I was a welterweight at, you know, in the top rankings right now at welterweight, I would just be praying that Terence Crawford gets out the division soon, because no one, in my opinion, touches this guy. No one. No one.
Really? Not even close? Not a chance?
Nah, I think Spence, well, it's not just what I think, but a lot of people feel like Spence was definitely either number one or number two. Look what he did. Look at the difference between number one and number two here.
This is the thing. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it.
I can't wait for you to say his name. Go on, Eddie. I know who you're dying to throw in.
I wasn't even gonna say it, because I know you would think I was gonna say Boots, and I was. But what I want you to understand, what I want you to look at, right? And you are schooled, Joe. You understand this. He took advantage of an opportunity of a guy like Spence, who has a lot of flaws. A lot of the same flaws that I overlooked, and he was able to exploit them. Fair play. And he looked incredible doing it. Not gonna lie and sit there and make any point like, oh, that's crap. But you do have to understand that styles make fights. And if he was to get in there, we don't have to say Boots. If there's another kid that he gets in there with that may not be even as good as Boots, right? May give him trouble because of the style matchup. I understand he may be worlds, he may even be worlds above. There are situations like when you've seen Floyd fight Marcos Maidana. Marcos Maidana almost doesn't even have a style. He just goes in there, he'll bite your gloves, he'll punch you in the leg, he'll punch you in the back of the head, he'll do anything to make you uncomfortable. And sometimes these things have an effect on how you perform, and they have an effect on the fight. Look at Vernon Forrest back in the day. Vernon Forrest was 6'1", legitimately 6'1". And when he rehydrates, he probably was 160 pounds, 170 pounds, right? I'll say 170 pounds. And he got in there with Ricardo Mayorga, who had no style. Come in there and just throw anything at you. But a good enough puncher and a tough guy, and didn't care about you punching him. And he stopped them the first time, and he beat him the second time. You got to understand there's styles and there's things that will put people off and put people in a position that they're not really ready to deal with. Even if they could be the most elite, like what Marcos Maidana did to Floyd. Now Floyd still won the fight. But what I'm saying is these types of things can happen. Now, on the other side, then you get a kid, and of course now I mentioned Boots, then you get a kid like Boots who does everything that Terence Crawford can do. Now, not at the level. Wait. Not at the level, because he hasn't fought the competition. But I am a fighter. I have an eye for what happens in the ring. I can see these things. Even though you pick Crawford over Spence, and you were 100% right, and everything you said came true, all those things I seen. All those things I seen happening. All those things I could see happening. But I picked Spence because I thought there was this going and that other thing. And against my better judgment, I went against it, right? But what I'm saying with Boots is probably, I don't know if he's the puncher. I've never been in there with Crawford, so I don't know how he punches. But I've been in there with Boots. I know how he punches, even as a 147-pounder. Now, is he fast? Absolutely. It's Terence Crawford fast. They both are. What I'm saying is this is a fight that, on attributes, only we're saying attributes. We're not saying what has happened already and who they fought in the level, because we know Terence Crawford's worlds above him in resume. So we're not going to sit there, and even in pedigree, because of what he's done at all these weights and everything, right? But what I am saying is, of all the kids, I mean, I say kids, I'm like I'm old, of all the guys that are there, he poses a problem. He may not think it's a problem. And the thing that happens with people who don't quite understand it, they'll look at like, oh, there's no way. Crawford is the greatest of all time. And it's fine. He's making a damn case for it. I get it. But there are still things that can happen in a ring. fights are not fought on paper. They're not fought on paper. And this is part of the reason why I picked Spence, because I thought of some of the other factors that it would have an effect on the fight. It just didn't happen. And the paper won this time, right? So what I'm saying is, though, that Boots, whether you want to believe it or not, maybe he gets stopped by Crawford in the first round. I don't know. But regardless of that happening, right now as it looks, he poses a serious problem, a serious problem for anyone at that weight and at 54. I'm telling you, I'm just saying, if he gets caught and knocked out, fine. But I'm telling you, he poses a serious problem. Now, maybe he doesn't. Maybe you're right. Maybe he gets knocked off by Crawford very easily. But as I'm looking at it now, that's going to be a tough fight. Now, we'll see if that even happens. But trust me, it will be. I don't want to hear any like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. I've been trying. I've told you. And before you go at me, Joey, I am not Johnny. I just want to let you know that.
Just to let people in on that inside joke there, there's a one of Eddie's real good friends called Johnny runs his Twitter account, and he's like the biggest Jaron Ennis fan. So he always tweets the most craziest things about Ennis, and it's I'm always kind of getting onto Eddie saying, I bet you tweeted that, and we laugh, but it's never him tweeting. But I think I don't want to carry on going on too much about this situation. Obviously, it's a hypothetical fight, and it's one that we may not even see. But yeah, like I say, you know, Boots has had 31 fights now. He's only boxed one former champion. I feel like they need to step him up. I understand there's a lot of guys in the queue, a lot of credible good fighters in the queue at 147. But yeah, we need to see him stepped up. I don't want to see Boots get in too many, I don't want to say wars, because I don't feel like he's been in too many wars, but I don't want to, every fight puts miles on the clock unless you're getting someone out in a round. And I don't want to see him get his opportunity when he's had too many, you know, too much miles on the clock. Reminds me of a fighter called, from the UK, called Thomas Patrick Ward, only that they don't have a, you know, they're nowhere near each other in terms of style. But Thomas Patrick Ward was an excellent, excellent amateur. Turn pro, I think he's probably about 33-1 now. By the time he got a big fight, basically he had so many miles on the clock. We've talked about him before. He goes 10 rounds every time. He can't punch. And by the time he got his shot, it wasn't even at a world title. It was an eliminator. He got absolutely, you know, pasted. And that was because I think he had way too many miles on the clock. I don't want to see Ennis do that. I understand Ennis does usually bang people out. He doesn't, you know, have the kind of mileage that a guy with 31 fights has, but yeah, I just want to see him have the fights rather than all the talking. But I just think I would just want to end it by saying that I feel like Crawford is, you know, an all-time great in my opinion. I think he could have hanged with any welterweight. I'm not saying he beats every single welterweight ever, but I think he could hang with all the best welterweights ever. And just the versatility, the smartness, the judge of distance, the switch hitting, he's comfortable in both stances, he can punch, his feet are fantastic, his defense is, you know, was really good the other night, probably the best I've seen it. Oh man, honestly, the guy is a phenom. But anyway, that is it though for the review part of the show. We're now going to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former heavyweight world title challenger. It is, of course, Mr. Gerald Washington. Gerald, welcome back on the show, my man. It's been a long time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure, Gerald. So we last spoke back in February of 2020. At that time, you were getting ready to fight Charles Martin. How have things been since then? Obviously, you've only boxed the one time, the Demarizm fight. But yeah, how have things been in general, my man?
Everything's good, man. I've been training here at Brick House Boxing in North Hollywood, California, and I've been training with Malik Scott, and we've just been working, man. We've been doing a lot of training, just kind of staying ready, preparing for whatever is to come, boxing with lots of guys from different kind of experience levels, and just preparing and getting ready. And we're just, you know, ready to go next week.
Yeah, you mentioned it there. The one thing that is new is that you're now training under Malik Scott. What has that been like, Gerald? I've seen some clips of your training online, and Malik's got you moving like a middleweight.
Yeah. We're just practicing, just trying to take advantage of all our strengths and put everything together, and just, you know, practicing different situations, scenarios, and just trying to really pinpoint the stuff that we need to do, you know, for the particular moment that we need.
Yeah, and I think your fight got announced either yesterday or today. You'll be boxing Derek Chisora August 12th in London as part of the Joshua White 2 undercard. Firstly, Gerald, how much notice have you had?
A couple weeks, just to prepare. I'm not sure, 3-4 weeks or something like that. I kind of just got a heads up, and then you know, it was go time.
And then it was a matter of
securing the fight, and then from there, once I found that out, it was just a matter of getting ready, preparing.
I guess with heavyweights it's a bit different, but you will know the answer to this question. How good shape are you in? Are you in good shape?
Oh yeah, I'm in great shape because I stayed in shape. You know, I know I wanted to fight. I didn't know when it was going to happen. I actually went to camp with Derek in December to help him for the Fury fight. And then came back, and I've just been training, just trying to see what's going on, you know, potential things here and there. And then Derek called me, and he asked me if then I got a call saying, hey, am I down to fight? Would I be down to fight? And it came through. So, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunity. He's a stand-up guy. And I know he comes to fight, man. It's gonna be good action. He brings the action, so it's gonna be a great night of fighting for everybody.
And you said there that you were in camp with him. That's something I didn't know. But that was prior to linking up with Malik Scott, right?
I was working with Malik Scott during that time.
Okay. I wanted to ask as well: is there any kind of advantage, you know, here for you? The fact that obviously. Well, you said there that you'd done some rounds with Derek. I didn't know that, but obviously Malik fought Derek. I was at that fight many moons ago. Is that an advantage in any way?
I mean, I'm familiar with him and his style. You know what I mean. But he's very unpredictable. What you do know about him is that he's going to come fight. He's going to make you. He's going to force you to fight. He's gonna force the action. He's gonna make it hard all night long. You know, that's his way to make it happen for himself. And you know, we have to do everything we can to stop that from happening. You know, to play our game.
And being brutally honest, Gerald, obviously you've lost 5 of your last 7. On paper, you're in the worst form you've been in. But like I said earlier, maybe Malik has brought something totally new to your game. Maybe if things work out right, you'll be able to get another run at a world title. But do you view this fight against Derek as a last chance saloon for yourself or not?
I mean, that's pretty much where we are right now as far as... you know, it's kind of a do or die situation. You know, you can always get offered fights and stuff here and there, but it's like, what caliber of fights? This is a big fight on a big card on a big stage, and this fight means a lot. You know, I was offered this fight and I took it, you know, graciously as a blessing from above. I'm grateful for this fight, and I'm gonna give it all I have.
And stylistically, I can see you beating Chisora. I'm going to come out and say that. Obviously, you'd need to be fit. You'd need to have improved on your footwork, which I think you have. You can't obviously allow Chisora to walk you down like he does so well to other fighters when he just drowns guys with that relentless pressure. Obviously, you're going to need to use your jab. And you've got a good jab, but you can't allow Chisora to obviously get you backed up on the ropes, have you in a share with that high guard, letting him tee off on you. Otherwise, I don't think it ends well. Is that a fair assessment of my mini tactical breakdown there?
That's exactly right.
Thank you. Like I say, I think if you can move around the ring, like I've seen you do in those short clips on Instagram, if you can do that for 10 rounds, if you're fit enough to do that, all while just popping out that jab, I feel like you can win this fight quite easy, Gerald, to be totally honest, I'm going to come and say. I wanted to ask, when do you fly over?
Yeah, I'll be there on a fly out Monday.
Okay, Monday.
I'll be there on Tuesday, yeah. Tuesday morning.
Okay, Monday the 7th. Okay, cool. And yeah, as you'll be part of that undercard, let me quickly get your prediction for the main event. Joshua White 2, how do you see it going, Big G?
It's going to be a good fight, good scrap. You know, they both got a lot on the line. I think that Joshua's the more of the technical boxer. And I think Dylan's going to bring more smoke, but AJ says he's going to be looking to bring the smoke. So we might have a big heavyweight, you know, big show, a big crazy fight. I don't know. I think he played his last fight kind of safe as far as with Franklin. So I don't think he's going to get too risky. You know, I think he'll stay behind his jab. And we'll see what him and then Dylan White and Buddy McGirt put together.
Obviously Derek James now with Joshua for his first fight with him. Yeah. And talking of Derek James, I'm sure you saw that mega fight on the weekend. Spence Crawford.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I got
to
get your opinion on that. What a performance from Crawford.
Yeah, that's all you can say about that, man. I never seen that before. Something so clean, something so flawless. That was a beautiful performance. And, you know, the whole boxing world is going to be able to take a lot from that.
And just finally, before I let you go, Gerald, we've whizzed through everything I had from you, or for you, I should say. But yeah, if you want to close it out with any closing words to the listeners, just say whatever you like before we let you go, my man.
Just looking forward to coming back to the UK. You know, I'm grateful to Derek Chisora for giving me this opportunity. He's a stand-up guy. Looking forward to sharing the ring with him.
There we go. Listen, Gerald, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for your time. Best of luck August 12th, and I'll be pulling for you to get the win.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We start with a piece of sad news, really. It was a fight I was really looking forward to. Artur Beterbiev against Callum Smith. It was for the unified light heavyweight titles. That, unfortunately, has been postponed. No date announced just yet for the rescheduled date. But yeah, Beterbiev suffered a bone infection to his jaw, and he had to undergo surgery. So it was Artur Beterbiev that had to, unfortunately, pull out. But yeah, hopefully we see it rescheduled. In other news, it is official now. Lee Wood will be boxing Josh Warrington. So Lee Wood defends his title there against Josh Warrington. An all-British world title showdown there, live on DAZN, October the 7th. It goes down in Sheffield at the Utilita Arena. Quite interesting, actually. I thought it would have probably gone down at the, you know, in Leeds at Elland Road or whatever, but no. On the undercard as well, on the undercard, it's another fight that's been rescheduled. We're going to see Terry Harper get in there with Cecilia Brackhouse for the WBA and WBO 154-pound, super welterweight world titles. That's going to be going down, like I say, on that undercard again. The date for that, October the 7th in Sheffield, live on DAZN. In other news, we're going to see the all-British light heavyweight showdown between Joshua Buatsi and Dan Aziz. It's been confirmed for the O2 Arena. October the 21st is the date. Again, I don't think they have an undercard for that just yet, but it's a great, great fight there. Two South Londoners as well, so it should be a good one. And then, yeah, finally, this piece of news here, Chantel Cameron and Katie Taylor will be having a rematch. It goes down at the Free Arena in Dublin. The date for that, November the 25th, again, of course, live on DAZN. All the best there to Chantel, friend of the show. That's it, though, for the news part of the show. Moving on now to the preview part. This one takes place this Friday, tomorrow, at the Fools Park in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Over here, I don't think it's going to be televised, but we're going to see for the WBO European Super Lightweight title, Sean McCombs, 16-1, good win last time out against Casey Benjamin. He gets in with Alejandro Moya of Spain, who's 17-1. We're also going to see Padraig McCrory, 17-0, getting in there with Steve Woodall, who's 18-1 with a draw. That's over 12 rounds there at Super Middle. Moving now to Belarus at the Historical and Cultural Complex. Over here, return to the ring for former WBA World Super Lightweight Champion Kirill Relic. He's 23-3, hasn't boxed in over 4 years. We haven't seen him since he got he got TKO'd by Regis Progre. He's back, though. Like I say, just over 4 years out the ring, he steps in with Nadzir Bakshiyu, who is 7-17 with 3 draws. That's a 6-rounder there. It does take place at 140. Moving now to the Opera stage in Finland. We are really branching out here to venues and countries that we don't normally mention, but Robert Hellenius definitely deserves a mention, the Nordic Nightmare, 31-4 these days. He's back in an 8-rounder here against Mika Milonen, who's 6-0 with 6 KOs, but he is 41 years of age. All the best there to big Robert Hellenius. And yeah, moving to another place that, again, we don't really go to. This one is at the Fadil Vokri Stadium in Kosovo. Over here, I don't know if I've banged my head and woke up in 2013, but Robin Krasniqi, 52-7. It's a 10-rounder at light heavyweight against Najib Mohammadi, who is 45-9. Both guys way, way past their best now. I guess it just comes down to who has the most left, which is probably Krasniqi, I'd say. All the best to both guys there. And then, yeah, the final fight or fight card to mention, it goes down, of course, on Saturday at the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas, USA, live on DAZN. I'm more interested, I suppose, in the women's fights on this card, if anything. So yeah, let's start with one straight away. Shadeja Green, it's going to be good to see her back out. Very exciting fighter, 12-0 with 11 KOs. She is being talked about as one of the biggest threats to Clarissa Shields, so it's good to see her out again. She gets in with Olivia Curry, who's 7-1. Not been knocked out in that one loss, so it'd be interesting if she can take Shadeja Green a couple of rounds, but again, take her the distance, probably won't happen. I'm expecting Shadeja to probably get a stoppage there. It's over 10 twos, and then, yeah, Amanda Serrano, again, of course, over 10 twos. She defends her IBF, IBO, WBA, WBC, and WBO World Featherweight titles, and her record, of course, is 44-2 with a draw. She gets in with Heather Hardy, who's 24-2. It's a rematch, obviously. Serrano beat her on points back in 2019, in September 2019, took her 0, and yeah, since then she's had 3 fights, winning one of them by unanimous decision, winning one by majority decision, and losing one by unanimous decision to Jessica Kamara. So I don't really see much point in this. Amanda Serrano said she really wanted to give her an opportunity because basically it was, you know, Heather Hardy who gave her an opportunity at the weight. So it's more of kind of, you know, like a, I don't know, repay the favor type of fight, if that even makes any sense. I'm not that bothered about it. I think Serrano will probably hope to go in there and get a stoppage this time. She has 30 KOs to her name now. She'd like to go in there and get a stoppage here, be the first lady to stop Heather Hardy and do something she couldn't do in the first fight. And then, of course, the main event, Jake Paul, 6-1, coming off that loss, obviously, last time to Tommy Fury. Quite interesting to see that this one's actually scheduled for 10 rounds. I want to say that's got to be the first time that he's actually been scheduled for a 10-rounder. I think the Tommy Fury one was an 8-rounder. So, yeah, he moves up to 10 rounds here against Nate Diaz, who's making his boxing debut. I have to say, I don't think it goes 10 rounds, so it doesn't matter if they made this a 20-rounder. But yeah, I'm expecting Jake Paul to probably knock Nate Diaz out within probably the first 5 rounds. If it's a 10-rounder, there's probably a decent bit of money on that, actually. A decent price. I wouldn't mind having a little look. Rounds 1-5. I think they probably offer that on Sky Bet, but I haven't seen the price. But yeah, I'm expecting Jake Paul to have way too much for Nate Diaz. He should be much younger, fresher, stronger, and all the rest of it. Eddie, I don't think there was anything at all to actually come to you about in part two, but did you want to say anything on anything that's been mentioned thus far, or just leave it for me to wrap up?
Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see Jake Paul in again. You know, he's going to bring the people out. But and it's funny because this Nate Diaz, they actually, if I'm not mistaken, do have, you know, boxing in their thing, their background. I don't know if it was Nick or Nate or both of them that was always sparring with Andre Ward back in the day. I can't remember for sure. But you know, they're obviously comfortable, you know, in, you know, boxing with their hands and doing things a lot. You know, they were actually pretty decent strikers in MMA, but it's going to be interesting to see them in an actual boxing match. You know what I mean? I don't know how much I'm looking forward to that or not. You know what I mean? It's going to be a spectacle. You know that. You know, Jake Paul, like I said, brings people out. So I think I'll definitely take a look.
Yeah, quick little Google search has just told me that, yeah, it is indeed Nate Diaz who used to spar with Andre Ward. So that has actually made me... that's kind of stopped me in my tracks, actually. Maybe we won't see the KO as easy as I expect, but yeah, I wouldn't want to bet against Jake Paul either way. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part, then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news. We've just wrapped up the preview part. We whizzed through this part. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 407 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Gerald Washington. All the best to him when he gets in the ring with Derek Chisora in just a few days' time. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. Remember to follow us on our new Twitter, which is on... obviously Twitter, @boxhard_podcast. That's where you can find us from now. I'm trying to follow everyone back. It's hard trying to remember who I was following before and stuff, so please drop us a follow on there. If I haven't followed back, just you know, send us a little tweet and I'll of course follow you back. But yeah, like I say, thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.